You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. Thursday, March the 14th, Cheltenham Festival, Day 3, St Patrick's Thursday, coming to you once again from the FitzDares Lounge, and nestled in the corner of the ROA Chalet at the bottom of the courtyard here at Cheltenham. And for the first time this week, there's some sunshine, would you believe it? Yesterday, however, it was a case of plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose, because Willie Mullins was dominant with three winners, albeit El Fabiolo fluffed his lines in the champion chase, providing us with a little more drama than perhaps the complete predictability of day one. Dan Skelton came to the party not unexpectedly, and certainly not unexpectedly with Langer Dan. We'll be discussing his dual handicap strike in a few moments' time. And there was no joy again for Nicky Henderson, a couple of whose horses ran okay, but in the main it was a tale of disappointment. And he has continued in the same vein this morning, because Sergino and Shanna Bob, two leading fancies for Friday, are also out. They will join the same owner, Shishkin, in missing the Cheltenham Festival. Of course, John Bond missed out yesterday, and Constitution Hill was pulled out before the week began. So before we reflect on the brilliance of Willie Mullins and his century of Cheltenham Festival winners, we check in with Nicky Henderson, who's en route here from Seven Barrows this morning, and he has been explaining to me exactly how he is feeling now and how the last few hours have panned out.
When it came down to it, we've all agreed you can't do it.
And is it the same deal? I.e., you can't obviously see anything wrong with them, but the horses just aren't running well enough to have confidence in running.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we were trotting around in the school this morning with Sergino first lot, and the horse coughed. And so I said, "Who was that?" And Sergino was right behind the horse that coughed, and I said to Charlie Boy, "I wish it had been Sergino."
Because then you'd have had some idea, some certainty.
Concrete evidence, yeah, exactly. Whereas, to be honest with you, he looked $1 million. Mm. But I cannot have a horse like him run like, say, the horse did in the first race yesterday. It was a very good horse. And then he can't get up the hill on the far side.
Yeah, Jinko Blue. But then you've had Lucky Place run well, Lucia run well, Doddy the Great run well up to a point.
He said he was the same as the others.
Right, so he finished quite tired, didn't he?
He got a bit further, and so at least he got over the top of the hill. The others have all pulled up before the top of the hill.
So now, how do you make a decision as to what you run and what you don't run? If you're still running horses today, which ones do you sort of feel confident and comfortable to run?
Only because these are all older horses who have been through the mill time and time again. They're experienced horses that, I mean, I think the younger they are, the more you've got to protect them.
Because because of the damage you can then do to them if you give them a hard race now?
Yeah, how are we going to feel if Sergino does the same as what Jinko Blue did yesterday? Mm. He gets to the top of the hill and drops out, Stone Mountain starts, and he pulls him up. I look completely brain dead.
Do you?
And it's 50-50.
Do you find?
It really is.
I had a vet on yesterday, and we were talking about the way these viruses manifest themselves, or whatever it is, anything that's keeping horses 1 degree under or several degrees under, and. Do you find with the older horses, so some of those slightly more grizzled handicappers, that if there isn't anything showing up, their immune systems can be stronger than the younger horses?
Well, I think that's probably true. But two legit important things. Shishkin showed us, Now, he was obvious, but we scoped everything after its run, and there's nothing to be seen. An interesting Sergino's track wash when we took it was literally gin clear, which is what it's meant to be. Yeah. I mean, crystal clear. I actually chucked it in the waste bin in the vet's box, because I didn't think it was worth analysing, because it's so clean it can't be wrong.
Yeah.
But actually, the boys then took it out of the dustbin and thought, oh, heck, I think we'd better do this. And actually, it was perfectly okay. But Joe's been amazing. And as he says, you know, we know he's very, very good, Nick, and so is Shannon Bob, to be fair. They've both got their lives in front of them.
No, nothing in.
Can't do it.
There's nothing in the geography of the yard, Nicky, is there, in terms of
nothing at all. No. We've been through that. We went through that 3 weeks ago, to be fair, when the odd one was showing up with dirty noses and funny track washes, and we were isolating them until there were too many to isolate. But no, there's absolutely nothing. No.
And nothing weird, because sometimes you find that you've had a terrible batch of hay or feed, or there's something in the water.
No,
or nothing
we
like
have
that.
A very good man called Alan Brighton from the Irish Equine Board. He comes in and checks everything. He was in last week. He was in the week before. The hay's come back 100%. He's my go-to man under these situations, and he hasn't got a clue either.
You've still got horses with theoretical chances this week. Have you completely given up hope of getting in front of the judge or not?
No, none, because today I have given up. I will attend.
But do you think it's now virtually impossible to have a winner?
Yeah.
You do?
It is impossible, yeah.
So I can't even have my fiver each way on Mill Green at 50-1 and hope like hell.
You would be the greatest optimist in England if you did that.
Well, okay.
Although Richard Hoyles went on about him for half an hour on a preview I did the other day.
Okay, well I might do it just for the hell of it. at what point do the disappointments start to recede and you just think to yourself, do you know what? Worst things happen at sea, I just regroup and we'll roll around next year.
Because the Cigino one has been hanging over me for 48 hours and I'm just relieved I've got it over with.
Okay. So
it's over. It's over.
Yeah.
You do know what I mean? That was the hardest one because there's nothing wrong with him.
So you've done it now. You may as well just turn up and enjoy the day.
Correct. I got one in the last, and then what have we got tomorrow? Yeah, I got two in the Martin Pipe.
Can I quickly ask you a question about Willie Mullins, given that he got his 100th festival winner yesterday?
Well, A, he's a very good mate, so is Jackie. Do you know what I mean? And we've always had fun together. You know, we enjoy it. We have plenty of banter. It doesn't mind me winding him up about the Willie Mullins Racing Festival. He's just a genuinely good bloke, but he's very, very good at what he does. I mean, it is phenomenal. We all know that it's quite a tricky old job, this. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm listening.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all know it's quite a tricky old job. So, I mean, he's just making us all look bloody ordinary, to be honest with you. We probably are bloody ordinary. But he's in a different... Well, yeah, it's a... You know, you just got to admire the whole operation, and you see those, you know, the logistics of what he's achieving at this meeting, of moving those horses around. It's there's a hell of a, it just doesn't happen by chance.
No.
It's a very, very, very well oiled cog.
Nicky, appreciate your time this morning. I hope you can enjoy the next couple of days unencumbered.
Okay.
Thanks. Take care. For the beleaguered Nicky Henderson, smiling through the gloom and paying a handsome tribute there to the rampaging Willie Mullins. We said it all earlier in the week, Jane, but we can double red underline it now. The strength of this operation is nothing short of remarkable. Just give me your reflections on the 100 up yesterday. I was trying to find some sort of historic parallels, looking back through the Vincent O'Brien days, trying to look at trainers who've maybe done this at sort of Melbourne Cup carnivals, or people who've dominated at Breeders' Cup, something, some kind of parallel anywhere in the world, and I'm struggling to find one.
I'd imagine when he won with Tourist Attraction, it would be beyond even wildest dreams. I'd imagine when Whether or Which won the 1996 bumper, that he wouldn't dream that his son Patrick would one day ride his 100th Cheltenham Festival winner.
Yeah.
It's out of this world, incredible. People who have their own views on the domination of what it is. But you know, Nick, when you have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a novice hurdle, it tells you that nothing is slowing down. If anything, the acceleration is only increasing. Ballyburn, Factofile, they're the future. And while El Fabiolo may have blown out, he certainly has the young guns coming along.
And actually, when you stood away from the dominance of one man and tried to look more specifically at the horses concerned, the winners of those first two races yesterday are just out of the top draw at any festival. Ballyburn and Factofile, so complete.
And at any trip, you know, there are people talking about which race would they go for just to avoid them. And I think Connections of Slade Steel, while he was imperious in the Supreme, they made the absolute correct call. And they learned that lesson at the Dublin Racing Festival, which is showing the benefit of running at the Dublin Racing Festival. Factofile, I know that Grey Dawning, Dan Skelton, went on the record saying today that he wanted to avoid him, so he's running in today's Turners. Again, looking at the performance yesterday, it looks like a clever move.
And normally the avoid one horse principle is one that will trip you up. It's normally a banana skin because you're playing into somebody else's hands rather than playing to your own strengths. But in these cases it's working. And is that another example of the way that with Mullins in town you simply have to rethink your modus operandi?
Well, yeah, but then there will be people say, well, you shouldn't have avoided El Fabiolo and we'd have a deeper champion chase yesterday and look how it turned out. But Captain Guinness is a worthy winner, but it did fall apart.
All right, I want to ask you something as someone who is very close to training racehorses.
No, I'm not.
Well, you are physically in very close proximity to training racehorses.
Geographically.
You look out of your bedroom window, or your current bedroom window anyway, and still see horses of some calibre. You breed horses, you breed National Hunt horses. Would you, if you took out a licence tomorrow, if you took over your dad's licence, I know this is probably not going to happen, but if you did do that, would you train differently to how you've been brought up because you need to compete with someone who is pushing the boundaries to the extent that he is?
I think everybody trains in their own pattern, their own instinct. I think Gordon Elliott trains different to Willie Mullins and he gets very good results. I think Henry de Bromhead trains different to everybody else, and you see what he gets horses to prime for this week. But what Willie Mullins has, I suppose, not only is his innate instinct and intelligence, is he's got the complete package of sourcing, financing and the workforce behind him. And it's not about one trainer, about one man. Willie Mullins hasn't saddled one horse this week.
So he hasn't actually physically put
a saddle on a horse, and that is a testament to David Casey, Dick Dowling, Ruby, Patrick, everybody who's behind him. And he's built that, himself and Jackie have built that for the last 20 years. And that's what I really admire about him. And I think that's the biggest thing. So when he needs to go to the box to entertain the owners, that the machine is still running.
And that he is very good at. Because I think, I was reflecting on this, I had quite a long drive home last night, quite a long drive in this morning, so I went back to London. And I thought to myself, there are people who are, you know, brilliantly ruthless in whatever career they choose, but aren't necessarily so good at, you know, immersing themselves in it socially and so forth.
Are they able to delegate?
But also, he can live it, and I've seen it quite literally, 24 hours a day, and is able to keep sustain his own pace. No wonder his horses are so relentless.
Mm. But he's also able to enjoy it.
That's what I mean.
Yes, yeah.
So, and owners, so a lot of the British owners who have horses in training with Willie, and sometimes Gordon and Henry de Bromhead, quite often with Willie particularly, you ask them about it, yeah, they like having winners at Cheltenham, but they say it's quite good fun. It's fun.
Yeah,
they go to Ireland, have a weekend out there, get, you know, shown the sight. It's
because
more fun.
We are in the entertainment business. Whether it's you or I on the television, or people getting these horses to the ring. Ultimately, a person has a horse in training for enjoyment.
Mm.
It's entertainment.
But of course, it prompts all sorts of debate about the at what cost to the sport.
Oh, you love debate. We all love debate. It's what we all thrive on.
Yeah, I want to make this more of a celebration than a condemnation of his rivals or the sport, because we've talked about the various inadequacies in the British game ad nauseum, and everybody knows what they are.
But for a very long time, Ireland was Britain's poor relation. For as long as the record books have been written, we have been selling our best horses to the UK.
But you still are selling quite a lot of very good ones to the UK, because if you've got a horse that somebody will pay $300,000-$500,000 for. They come to the UK. We saw it again in the Caldwell dispersal the other day.
Mighty Band is running on Friday.
You know, say it quietly, but isn't it the case that your new-ish and new breed of trainers have just kicked this into a completely different gear? There were wonderful trainers in the old days, really wonderful trainers, Arthur Moore and Edward O'Grady and so forth. But combining that level of horse husbandry and expertise with a new level of commercial intuition, enterprise, ability to attract owners, looking beyond the boundaries, your relentless energy.
But there will be, and there is, like very young, aspirational, ambitious young trainers in the UK. Nicky Henderson, this is not a reflection of Nicky Henderson this week. It's his first, if he doesn't have a winner,
it'll be
his
first blank. Yeah, that's an aberration. You kind of have to bet without this
since week. Since 2008, yeah, so that's another factor. And Paul Nichols, okay, stay away, face scope dirty yesterday. So there's a couple of factors combining into this. There's some very good trainers in the UK, and I wouldn't dare say otherwise.
But what Mullins has done is extraordinary. As I say, if you can think of some sort of comparison from around the world, which looks like 100 Cheltenham Festival winners, then get in touch. So I was looking at Melbourne Cup carnivals and Breeders' Cups and all sorts of other things that I could try and relativize it to, and I couldn't quite. But we do reach parts that other podcasts don't reach here. So somebody will
They're
send something
Ferrari
in from Argentina
in
or South Africa or something.
Yeah, Ferrari and Formula One are no longer dominant, so it could come back around.
Alrighty. In terms of performance yesterday, we mentioned Ballyburn and Factor to File, and Patrick rode Willie Mullins' 100th winner, which was a lovely touch as well. Great interviews from Lydia on Racing TV. If you haven't seen them, they're on the Racing TV website and on the app. Just a little word for Rachel Blackmore on Captain Guinness, because if you thought the atmosphere was just a little tepid, every time she rides a winner, she lights the place up. The crowd really respond to her.
Of course they do. She's the Queen of Cheltenham, and she got her trophy from the Queen of England.
But it hasn't got old, has it?
No.
And you know how in this era things get old so quickly?
No, I think there's an appreciation for her, and her as a person, her as an athlete, and her for what she's done for the sport. And this is her 8th Cheltenham Festival. And Henry de Brom had said it. He said, as good as she is day to day, she's better at Cheltenham. She rises under pressure. And that's a... I would argue that's a 1 percentile talent. There's very few people do that under pressure. And I'm not saying there was a lot of pressure on Captain Guinness yesterday, but she would have been unaware. I think she would have been unaware that El Fabiola was out of the race, and yet she still pushed Edward Stone. She still made all the right moves to win the race on a horse who was 17-2.
Okay, I know that you're going to say, do stop it, because if ever I talk about you riding, you always kind of deflect it and say it's irrelevant now and you don't want to talk about it. But what you can give me an insight into, which I don't really know, is how you react to how you think people react to a bigger occasion if they're sports people. So you've ridden here, you've ridden at Punchestown, you've won races at Punchestown. Yeah, were you good at that? Were you good at on a bigger day being your usual cool self, or was your heart pumping 10 times faster?
Once you get out there, I was fine. Hated the preliminaries. I think most jockeys do. I hate the paddock. I hate small talk.
And is it worse when the paddock's as full as it is at Cheltenham, when everyone's
sure
trying to get a piece of you?
I couldn't find my connections in the Cheltenham paddock. It was so full for the county hurdle. Should have so many runners in the county hurdle. It was a big field in Hunter's Chase. Yeah, couldn't find them. And I was so annoyed then, because all I wanted to do was find the horse.
You hate small talk now, and you're on TV.
Well, to go on
it's
air
dangerous,
like,
yeah.
10 minutes.
I know. Right. As I haven't got you for too much longer, I want to talk...
Can we just praise Patrick Mullins' judgment in the bumper?
Well, yeah, he had
nine
options to choose from.
And he was comprehensively right, because Gordon Elliott filled the second and third. God, he must be getting frustrated at running into Willie Mullins. Today is a big day for him. Brighter days ahead.
Yeah.
Conflated.
She's the big one.
And
he'll genuinely be gutted if she's beaten. Yeah. So could today be Gordon's Thursday?
I hope it is.
For him and perhaps for your wallet.
He's been magnanimous in defeat, but he must feel like he's hitting his head off a brick wall. It's a little bit like home away from home for him. This is happening every day of the week at home.
Yeah. A lot of people will have given an opinion on Dan Skelton. We closed out yesterday's podcast by saying, oh, imagine if he did the double with Langer down an unexpected party. That would raise a few eyebrows. The horses got cheered into the winner's enclosure.
They did.
Sometimes horses that have not shown any form during the season and then spring back to life at Cheltenham have had a less warm reception at this festival. So clearly, there, in terms of the public here, there was warmth towards them and they'd been backed. Social media, the reaction was more mixed. People don't love horses with a string of noughts returning to their old mark and then bolting up.
Mm-hmm.
Other people think, if you look into the running and riding closely, no rules were officially broken, and therefore, what's the problem? It was there for everybody to see if they study the racing closely. Yeah. What sort of feeling does it leave you with normally?
I think he's got a job to do to get a horse targeted. He hasn't been found that he's broken any rules. He said after the race yesterday that the horse burst last time that he bled.
Mm.
So I think it's a marvellous achievement to get Langer Dan back, and who's to say he won't bring up the treble? He's only going to be a 9-year-old next year. As for Unexpected Party, I was so frustrated by him. I always put him down as a weak finisher, and when they rode him positively yesterday, I was like, oh, path to rule, pick him up the straight. But he actually had guts yesterday.
If you're talking about getting a horse handicapped, or if you think a horse is a bit high and you feel that you're only going to be winning off a mark that's low, and that is what the system is encouraging you to do, let's mm-hmm. not forget, you have to run that horse on its merits.
Mm-hmm.
But quite often, if you run a horse like they did, for example, to try and pick up bits and bobs of back-end place money in grade ones, but you get beat 35, 40 lengths, you find the handicapper will start dropping you.
Sam Waugh was another good example of that. He ran well yesterday. Yeah. Look, Dan Skelton, I tip my hat to him. He led the British in the bumper as well when he finished 8th of Royal Infantry. That's a nice horse. He'll be better on better ground.
An Unexpected Party. You know, anyone who thinks that was hard to find. Lydia tipped him. Rishi tipped him on this podcast. Matt Chapman tipped him.
All the experts.
Even I tipped him.
Ah.
And to be honest with you, you know, every blind pig found that acorn.
12 to 1.
But that's the beauty of Cheltenham. Horses like that still can be 12 to 1.
Yeah, well, it was super.
Well, Cheltenham Festival is not just a week where we enjoy 4 days of top quality sport. It's a week where the industry convenes and quite often scrutinises the best and the worst in the sport. If you work for Cheltenham and you work for the Jockey Club and you've got a lot of rain and attendances to worry about and sponsorships to fill, then you probably feel somewhat under siege. But if you didn't love the game, you wouldn't be doing it. And I welcome to the show Acting Director of Partnerships at the Jockey Club, Matt Powell. Matt, tell me a little bit about the specifics of your role. What have you been brought into the Jockey Club to achieve?
So thanks for having me on, Nick. So my role at the Jockey Club is essentially alongside my team to attract new sponsors and partners into the sport and into the Jockey Club. At the same time, obviously looking after a lot of our incumbent partners, making sure we're delivering for them, making sure they're getting a return on their investment, and hopefully sort of developing and growing those partnerships for the long-term good of the sport and for our business.
And so tell me a little bit about the partnerships strategy, because people look at race sponsorships as a barometer of how well you're doing. Is that a fair barometer?
Look, I think looking at sponsorship in horse racing based on race naming rights is actually quite reductive, and I think what we've tried to do over the last 18 months and what we're starting to deliver now is actually trying to leverage the collective power of the Jockey Club and all of our race courses. We've got an amazing array of race courses around the country, which gives us an amazing national footprint. We host a huge number of events, but I think every brand is different, and those kind of brand awareness driving assets like race titles, race day sponsorships are still really important, but a lot are looking at leveraging our first party data, you know, customer experiences on course. So here at Cheltenham this week, if you walk through the orchard, you'll see the Aston Martin showroom. You know, for them, that's a huge part of the partnership. Race naming rights is quite insignificant for them. So every brand that we work with is totally different.
It's quite interesting, this. I know you've done well with your partnership with Aston Martin. It struck me that if you had an unsponsored race, wouldn't you just say to Aston Martin, well, we'll give you that into the bargain, make them feel good, increase the profile, increase the relationship between the two courses, everyone gets much more visibility, you know, out there to the wider audience, to a television audience. Oh, Cheltenham are associated with Aston Martin, maybe I should be associated with Cheltenham. So other people knowing, it becomes a contagion amongst luxury brands, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, look, we've got to manage all of our sponsors, really. We've got a finite number of races, so obviously we try and leverage those as much as possible when driving our budget forward. But as I say, every brand is different, so it might work for one, but perhaps not the other. A good example, so Gallagher, who are one of our partners, mm-hmm. their partnership until actually this week was primarily and only focused on community activity, so bringing lots of kids that wouldn't have an opportunity to engage the sport. Mm-hmm. We've hosted lots of experience days at race courses. This week they sponsored the Baring Bingham for the first time, so they've started to extend their partnership into more, I guess, sort of TV facing inventory. So yes, look, it's an important part of what we do, but as I say, it's not the kind of be all and end all, as it were.
If you are waiting that long to attach a sponsorship to a race, does it follow you've had to give away that sponsorship at a much, much lower rate than its actual market value?
I don't think that's always the case. I think for us, it's often, each brand wants to announce a partnership and a new sponsorship when suits them, and sometimes waiting until closer to the event gives them a bit more media attention and media coverage. We'll have, if we look forward to future events, particularly at the Randox Grand National Festival, if you went on the sort of BHA admin site, you might see quote unquote unsponsored races, but there'll certainly be announcements to come in the not too distant future about those being filled with partners we're working with.
And do you feel that partners want to be involved across the brand? If somebody wants, for example, to be involved at Aintree or Cheltenham, do they necessarily feel they're getting value from attachments at Huntingdon or Wincanton or Market Rasen or Exeter or wherever?
Some do, some don't. And I think that the key thing for us is not every sponsorship will look the same. The different brands will have different objectives. So we announced the partnership with Trust the Trader sort of back end of last year. They're a national brand, so having sponsorship assets at all 15 of our race courses was hugely important to them. Mm-hmm. For the likes of an Aston Martin, who want to target a very specific demographic, it might be certain events suit them better. So I think what we're trying to do is not sort of force everything down everyone's throat. We're trying to be a bit more nimble and agile, build packages that actually, work for brands.
It's interesting what you're trying to do on a national level, particularly with brands such as Trust the Trader that you mentioned. To what extent are you still focusing as much of your energy on getting out into local community, not just in terms of your charity work, but also fostering strong business relationships with local communities so that they might then want to invest in what should be great community hubs, i.e. these wonderful green spaces, quite often quite close to towns and cities?
Yeah, absolutely. I think our strategy from approaching partnerships at a group level doesn't preclude us from doing local sponsorship deals that are important to those businesses and those racecourses. So, a great example of that is Badger Beers' support at Wincanton. Mm-hmm. Hugely important for both the racecourse and that local business, engaging their staff and customers in that area. So we absolutely don't want to lose that kind of local feel to a lot of the racecourses. We're just trying to sort of, look forward in how we can best commercialise some of our assets. Mm-hmm. And of course, all of the profit that we make gets reinvested back into the sport. So this is where we see the kind of opportunity to really push that forward.
But sort of opening that out, obviously Badger Beer has been a sponsor at Wincanton for as long as I can remember, probably before you and I were born. And they've been had wonderful history with that. Do you look at that and think, right, well, if we've got a race at Huntingdon, should we be looking to Brampton Engineering, or should we go to Exeter and go to Holden Gin or whatever? All these local businesses can do so much for those smaller tracks, can't they?
Yeah, look, and absolutely, we do that. So the local courses will be exploring those relationships. I think where we see the biggest commercial opportunity, and we're in the market at the moment for a title partner for the Cheltenham Festival. That will make the biggest step change for us in terms of being able to drive revenue and reinvest back into the business.
And that's got to be a real biggie, hasn't it? So what interest have you had this year in being a title partner at the Cheltenham Festival? How many players are there in that game at the moment?
We've got a few, and look, this week is a big week for us in terms of hosting a number of prospects. There's no better time to try and sell Cheltenham than during this week.
What's it worth? What's it worth, a title sponsorship at the Cheltenham Festival?
well, we're looking for, it'll be a multi-million pound deal. So it's not, it wouldn't be an insignificant investment for a brand, but we're this is one of the great sporting events, iconic sporting
is
events.
Is it eight figures? Is it 10 million plus?
It wouldn't be probably quite that high, Nick, but it's, you know, we've benchmarked our sponsorship rights against other sports rights holders. We've done a lot of work, so we're confident of the valuation that we've got on those rights. But, you know, ultimately, as I said, each sponsorship deal is different, so it depends what the rights look like in terms of where that final fee lands. But yeah, look, we see it as a multi-million pound opportunity.
If Flutter or Entain came along to you and said, we want one of our brands to be the brand sponsor of the Cheltenham Festival, and we'll give you, I don't know, £6.5 million for it, Matt, what would you say?
Look, I think at the moment, if you look at the sponsors across the week at the festival, we've got a number of different betting brands that activate on each day. So I don't think right here, right now, having a title sponsor that's a bookmaker would necessarily be the route we want to take. But look, we're proud to have a number of fantastic betting partners. So it's not to say that it's not something we would explore.
You're sitting here in the Fitzstairs Club.
And we've got the Paddy Power Stairs hurdle today. So I think we get huge amounts of support from betting partners, and equally they all do a huge amount to promote the sport. So, you know, we're very happy to be working with them.
Now, quite often you hear people talk about senior executives in racing, whether they're at the BHA or ARC or the Jockey Club. And if they're big organisations, people go, well, these people are, you know, faceless suits and skirts that have no interest in the sport. Now, you were going to have a runner at the Cheltenham Festival. So what happened?
We were, yeah. So we've got a really nice horse at the moment with Harry Fry called Beat the Bat, who we were hoping would either run in the Supreme or potentially the County, but sadly pelvis stress fracture, tail as old as time. But yeah, we've had a few good horses over the years. Opening Batsman won what was the Racing Plus Chase, then now the Coral Trophy. I'm working the game because I love it, Nick. So, and lots of colleagues at the Jockey Club and the other organisations that you've mentioned, you know, so many are hugely passionate about this sport. And I think you're right, you sometimes get a reputation for not caring, but yeah, I love it. And if we could have had a runner this week, it probably wouldn't have done well for my career, if I'm honest. And equally, if it had one, I think I probably would have had my P45 by the end of the day, given what the celebrations would be like. So, yeah, look, I love the sport, and this is best week of the year for me.
Matt, I'm quite convinced this is exactly the way you wanted to start off your St Patrick's Thursday at Cheltenham. Appreciate you coming down. Thanks so much,
Matt
Powell.
Thank you,
Director of Partnerships at the Jockey Club. All right, so day three, and we check in with our resident artist, Liz Armstrong. Liz, the drama intensified yesterday. Your beloved El Fabiello, I'm afraid, let you down.
I was very sad and I felt awful when I told everyone to back it, but I'm sure everybody else did back it. But he pulled up before the virtue at the beginning of the race, didn't he?
Well, he made a terrible mistake, unfortunately, and then it was game over. But he looks okay. He lived to fight another day.
Yes.
I know you want to talk to me a little bit today about how you capture horses preparing for action as well as inaction.
Yes, this is very important. The general public don't realise all the work and hours and the devotion and dedication that goes into bringing that thoroughbred horse to a racetrack.
This is a really lovely study I'm looking at here. We talked about your work with coffee earlier in the week, coffee granules.
Yes.
They've been put to good use again here in this study called My Steed. Tell me a little bit about it and what you're trying to portray.
Well, this horse is one of my favourite horses for confirmation. He's retired now and eating grass and happy, but he was a horse named Sprinter Sacra.
Ah.
And his confirmation is the best I've ever seen. He had massive feet. But this is a sketch idea for a larger oil painting that I did some years ago. And the client actually came on my stand yesterday and reminded me. But it's the groom, it's the contact with the guy, the groom that looks after the horse, that walks him round. It gives the horse a good feeling. It gives the horse a feeling of security. These horses are very sensitive. They're very, very highly strung, in my opinion. And they wouldn't be so talented if they weren't quirky. So the groom and the way they handle them plays a huge part to the winning of the race.
And the complement to that is over the other side here, which is called Wish Me Luck. It's done in the same style. And we see a little bit more of the groom here. It's more the groom than the horse, and it's the groom in profile.
Yes, it is the groom in profile. There again, she's looking after the horse. She's making sure the horse is okay. And the jockey's just reaching down. He's just tying his girth with his own hands, but also they're having a conversation.
Yeah, I think you've got him just adjusting his stirrup leather there, haven't
yes.
you?
Yes. Yeah. And he's just saying, wish me luck, in my mind, because she looks devoted. They work their heart and souls out. They get up so early every morning, 4 or 5 o'clock, and people don't see this. Behind the scenes of horse racing is huge.
I don't think that people really appreciate that private moment between the groom and the jockey and the horse as they're going out. I think you've captured it really beautifully there. Some such wonderful images from here at Cheltenham and elsewhere. I love the last race at sunset here, which is a limited edition print.
That is actually inspired from Foslas Racecourse.
Is it really?
They phoned me up.
I'd have needed a few guesses. They need to be employing you as their resident artist.
They phoned me up at the last minute and said, we need art. We're just making a racetrack. So I told them to come down to London.
You've definitely used your imagination, that's for sure. And this piece here, which is a massive, big, striking piece, just as you come into the stand on your right.
It's a piece about, because I love the sea. It's, apart from animals, I love the sea. I find it very calming and a beautiful influence in my life. And visiting the south of France, it's a fantasy, really. It's about horses, ghost horses, coming out of the sea because they're all grey. And the medium is pastel and oil pigment, which just expresses... You can use your imagination, you can do what you like with it, but it's a very calming, people like that type of art, really weirdly.
Mm. And rather than seeing the sea as obviously as you might in other depictions, you've used the sort of colours of the marine, really, to express it, haven't you, as your backdrop?
I certainly have, Nick, I certainly have. And I throw paint on the canvas to get the sparkle of the sea, and I have. I've, again, using real pigment.
Spray there, yeah.
I spray it, I throw the colours on the canvas, and then when it's dry, I create a line drawing or a charcoal or pastel drawing in this case of my subject matter, which is Camargue horses.
And underneath here, something a little bit more conventional, one of your traditional traditional paintings using the betting slips as the backdrop. And this is Stage Star with Harry Cobden winning last year.
It
Do you like him today?
It certainly is. I don't know. I mean, he's been he hasn't been on the scene for a couple of months. You just don't know. He's a quirky horse. He could well come somewhere, or he could win.
Okay. Well, it's a lovely depiction of him. There he is. I'm hoping you haven't boxed him like you boxed El Fabiolo yesterday, Liz.
I'm going to say that.
Lovely to see you. It's looking good. We'll be back to do it one final time tomorrow.
Yes, we'll do a Gold Cup day.
Brilliant.
100 years of the Cheltenham Gold Cup.
You're on message as well. Liz Armstrong in the shopping village. If you want to come and see her, I would recommend it. Stand 47. You know where you're going.
Have a nice day, everyone. Be lucky.
Now, the wonderful Liz Armstrong. Do go and visit her. She's great. Jane is back with me.
Head of the race.
You've been brilliant this week. I don't know how you've managed to keep going so stoically your many jobs.
You want to talk about today?
I do. I just want you to give me your pin stickers guide to today, and just basically give me all 7 winners, really.
100%, yeah. So we'll do it. We'll endeavour. I said at the top, I admire Dan Skelton rearranging Grey Dawning's plans. I like him in the turners. Facel Vega is the current favourite on the back of the Willie Mullins juggernaut, but he's disappointed me, and until he does it, I won't believe it. I've been with the enigmatic Conflated all of the way through the preliminaries, the previews, and I'm sticking with him.
But you have to now, don't you? You feel like a right chump if he goes and wins and you've deserted him.
Henry de Bramhead's team are in formidable form, and Envoy Allen is justifiably top of the market, but he's too short. We're waiting news on Banbridge of whether he'll even run. But Conflated is contested in the 3 best chases in Ireland this year, and I think he's a great price. And brighter days ahead, and I know the way you're thinking. I'm not opposing either of those.
Oh, such a shame that Dysart Enos is a non-runner.
Yeah, I'm
that
is disappointed
that must be. Oh, Paddy Brennan must be distraught. That was his chance of the final festival
potential
winner.
Potential roll of the dice, yeah. So they're my three for the day. And Chupo, he's a bit short for me in the big race. I think Florian Porter could run a massive race, a race he loves, and I don't think he'll make the running.
And that will get a big cheer. And he could do, if Florian Porter won, he would exactly replicate Ingalls Driver by winning for 2 years.
Fourth.
Not the, and then winning the fourth.
Yeah, so there you go.
And don't forget dear old Cider Burla, who's looking for his fourth festival success. Jane is donning her trilby.
Is that my cue to go?
With feather to one side.
There's some very nice liqueur after arriving, though.
It doesn't really feel appropriate to comment on people's dress sense at the Cheltenham Festival, because everyone has their own way of doing things. But can I say, you looked so smart yesterday in your red coat.
That's nice.
And similarly so today. I mean, honestly, one or two of those creations, there are some really fabulously stylish
women,
and normally extremely well-dressed women who, how can I put this, they don't dress themselves, they are dressed by other people during Cheltenham Week in, well, you know, how would you describe it, Jane?
Colourful numbers.
Yeah. Anyway, you look brilliant.
Thank you.
Good stuff.
And on that note.
Thank you. That was Jane Mangan. Neil Phillips is along. Neil.
I want Jane to... This is zero alcohol.
No.
Oh!
Yes!
He's brought...
Yes, so this. So come on.
Jane doesn't drink, but Neil's... What have you brought, Neil?
So we've got... I'd like to introduce you. We've got Sophie and Abigail from House of Clarity here with their zero alcohol drinks here. So we're going to try some. We're going to taste them now.
Sophie and Abigail, thank you so much for coming.
No, thank you for having us.
This is definitely a first on this podcast. Do you like it, Jane?
There you go.
Jane says it's beautiful, and off she goes to broadcast. tell me a little first, Neil, and then we'll hear a bit more about it.
Well, the thing is, Nick, with all the choices, everybody coming racing, everyone's got to have a choice, haven't they? And we started introducing some zero alcohol drinks on the wine list last year for the first time. We had a great response on that because some guests were coming in saying, I don't drink out, or I'm driving. I actually just, what have you got with zero alcohol that's really good? So we did that. And then Abigail and Sophie touched base with the race course and said, look, we've got House of Clarity, we've created this. So they've actually got the feature here in the orchards, and it's great. People can come along, have sparkling, have cocktails. Great new piece.
Okay, so Sophie, tell me what I'm drinking here.
You are drinking our French Bloom White Sparkling.
French Bloom White Sparkling. Yeah. I'll just describe it. It's quite a rich colour. It's a good golden colour.
Developed by Magdie Tatanger. So the best. That's what we specialise in, the most premium luxury options. We've tried a great variety of different brands and different types of beverage, because some really pioneering new products in the market, and we've curated the best menu. We sell online, wholesale, and at Cheltenham we've got our pop-up bar. It's our debut for our pop-up bar, so
it's very fresh.
It is,
Neil.
It's
really
but
not insipid.
Exactly.
So it's got the colour of something with a bit more Pinot Noir in it, hasn't it?
Than
the Blanc de Blanc we were drinking the other
day. Yeah, exactly. I like the balance is great here, because you've got that little bit of weight, but I love the freshness. And it's just actually, Sophie, you're right, it's just, you're looking at a whole piece
That's
now.
That's actually really nice.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where the whole development and all these new products coming in is really exciting.
Neil knows, we like a drink on this podcast.
We did
that
do
is
eight,
easily,
eight,
that is easily the nicest non-alcoholic fizz I've had.
Yeah, completely.
It is de-alkalized as well. So
de-alkalized?
Yeah. So it goes through a natural process to de-alkalize the wine after it's obviously been curated using low temperature and a vacuum process to keep the profile intact. So then it is kind of what you would expect to see from a champagne on the market.
Right, so it doesn't take the taste away too much.
Definitely not. That's what they're all about, French Bloom. It's about using, you know, innovative processes to ensure that the profile and the balance is really well kept.
I think it's important because you're actually saying it's zero alcohol, and we know there's lots of people talking about low alcohol, and you're going by something and you suddenly see it's actually 0.5 or 1%, for example. Mm. And somebody said to me, one of the race courses said, it must be zero. Mm. you know, I just can't have 0.5 or 1. So I think it's great.
A lot.
Yeah.
So this product in particular is halal certified, 100% alcohol free.
Halal certified, 100% alcohol free.
Yeah. Yeah, vegan as well.
And it is
organic.
I mean, you are reaching every part.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
There is no part you are not reaching.
It's for everyone.
That's a great one line. But it just shows you, you know, it just shows you what, how things are progressing, and it's choice. I think it's really great. That, and you've also awesome. Got a very, just talk about the next drink you got here as well, because so I also love this too.
This is the Pentire, which is a botanical spirit, which is native to Cornwall. It uses botanics that are native to Cornwall, so it was quite nice to bring this to Cheltenham with us. But that's really, really refreshing. You know, you could have that throughout the day without it being too sweet, and it's got that rosemary in it, so it's quite savoury at the same time. So it's a really, really nice blend to have any time of the day.
That, for me, it's lovely. That, for me, is not something that tastes like it's trying to replicate another drink.
Yeah, it's got some really nice profiles in there, uniquely to itself, I think.
But you're right, it's not too sweet, is it, Neil?
No.
That's the thing, and I think, just on the finish, it's just really nice dry. I had one of these yesterday. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just...
You had two yesterday.
I had two yesterday, actually. I'm a regular. But it's that refreshing element. And this is the other piece, it's just having drinks. It's not about, it's your own style. Mm. That's the thing, which I think is great.
Well, thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Sophie, Abigail from House of Clarity. And Neil.
It was a first.
I know, it was a first. Neil and I are going to carry on getting jacked up on the botanicals. But at least I might make some sense this afternoon.
Yeah.
Thank you all for coming in. That is another Cheltenham Festival podcast from the ROA Fitstairs Lounge. Thanks to our very generous sponsors today. We will be back again for Gold Cup Day tomorrow. But for the moment, Thursday, March the 14th. See you again. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with Fitstairs.